Hello and welcome to Pets Plus Us, a weekly program of information and stories about the companions in our lives, our pets. I'm Mary DeFranco, your host for Pets Plus Us. Coming up this half hour, fear-free vet visits, why cats skip the litter box, safe house plants, and socializing your dog, all from the fall 2017 edition of Pet Tales. And we'll start with this one, your pregnancy and your pet, from Pet Tales. If you have a pet, you've already had a taste of what it's like raising a child. You know what it's like to have someone that depends on you for everything and anything. Remember that time your kitten made a mess on your new carpet? Well, just wait until your newborn has their first explosive poop all over that same carpet. Remember the last time your puppy's barking woke you up in the middle of the night? Well, get used to that, because a baby's cry is especially good at getting you up at all hours of the night as well. While expanding your family and having a new baby is exciting, it's important to keep your pet in mind during your pregnancy and when the baby arrives. You should monitor your pet's behavior and interaction with your new family member and take preventive care to avoid zoonotic risks. Zoonotic risks are disease agents that can be transmitted between animals and humans, including parasites, bacteria, fungi, and viruses. Anyone can catch a zoonotic infection. However, young children and older people are at greater risk. The most important preventive step against zoonotic disease is to take your pet to the veterinarian for their regular checkups and vaccinations. Also, make sure you feed your pet a safe, balanced diet. Raw food diets are prey items are ways that parasites can infect your pet. One of the most common zoonotic parasites concerning to expectant mothers is toxoplasmosis, a parasite that can be found in undercooked meat, soil, or cat feces. The parasite can cause serious birth defects. The CDC recommends that all women who are pregnant or planning on becoming pregnant should talk to their OBGYN about exposure to toxoplasmosis. If your pet bites or scratches you, it's important that you seek prompt medical attention, as bite or scratch wounds can become severely infected very quickly. When the baby arrives, you can help integrate your new bundle of joy to your household and with your pet by bringing home clothing or sheets that your baby has touched for your pet to smell. Also, spend quality time alone with your pet. This can be as little as half an hour, but it helps make your pet feel as though they're still important, just like you would do with an older child. Never leave your baby alone with your pet. If your animal's behavior is unpredictable, especially around children, try to consult a behaviorist as soon as possible to get their behavior under control. If your pet seems nervous once you bring your baby home, contact your veterinarian immediately to figure out the issue. In general, animals often adjust quickly to new babies in the household. As long as you take the necessary precautions, your new family member and your old companion will get along perfectly. Next, fear-free, taking the pet out of petrified. What the Fear-Free Movement Means for Your Pet, by Joshua Peitzold. Luring your cat into a carrier with a treat, telling a white lie to your dog about going to the park, and the look of terror in their eyes when they realize where you've taken them are all an unfortunate reality of trying to take your pet to the veterinarian. Now, picture an alternate reality, your dog eagerly wagging their tail as they drag you toward the front door of the office, or your cat happily headbutting you during the examination. In this reality, going to the vet stops being a chore, and you regularly bring your companion into the hospital, not just at times of illness or injury, but for wellness visits and preventive care. This reality isn't the product of an overactive imagination. It can be achieved with fear-free certification and training. Fear-free, for me, is any kind of handling or care that doesn't exploit pain, fear, or coercion to get the work done. We can condition animals to not merely tolerate, but to enjoy and participate in their care. And this benefits veterinary staff, owners, and the animals. Local dog trainer and client of Parenton Veterinary Hospital, Lisa Skiavensky, said. Staff members at Parenton Veterinary Hospital recently completed this certification, which includes an 8-module online course that teaches veterinarians and clinic staff to identify signs of fear in pets and to reduce or remove anxiety triggers in the hospital environment. Tactics include using scents like pheromones, especially for cats, playing relaxing music, warming the exam table, examining the pet on a mat on the ground, rewarding with treats, and utilizing mild sedation and analgesics for potentially painful or scarier procedures. There's absolutely a difference dealing with a doctor who's trained in fear-free handling and one who isn't. The reports back from people I've referred to, doctors who are fear-free certified, have been unbelievably positive, Skiavensky explained. Combined, all the techniques, protocols, and products taught or recommended in fear-free training work to reduce fear, anxiety, and stress. This leads to a more cooperative patient as well as safer and more efficient treatment. To know that you're sending your animal to a vet that will handle them with care and compassion is invaluable as a pet owner, Skiavensky said. Using methods that involve fear, like pain or shock collars, only conditions and lead dogs to have more fear. For more information on the Fear Free Initiative, please visit fearfreepets.com. Next, the benefits of canine socialization. This is also from Pet Tales Autumn 2017 edition. What is socialization? Socialization specifically refers to the learning process associated with interactions between individuals of the same species. In canine behavior, this term is often generalized to include interactions with humans, objects, new environments, and other animals. Dogs begin learning how to interpret their surroundings from a very young age, and this will shape how they respond to similar situations in the future. Why is socialization important? It is vital for all creatures to learn how to interpret their environment and those in it so that they can know how to respond appropriately. When a young dog is properly socialized, he or she should feel comfortable exploring new places and meeting new people and other dogs. Without adequate socialization, a dog is more likely to become fearful or nervous in these situations and may react inappropriately. This is understandable for two very important reasons. First, we do not want our dogs to suffer from fear or anxiety, as this has a severe impact on their welfare and quality of life. Second, we want to avoid injury to our dogs and ourselves. Poorly socialized dogs are more likely to become aggressive and can seriously hurt a person or other dog if put in a situation that causes them to feel fearful. Behavioral issues are the number one cause of relinquishment to shelters, as well as the number one cause of death among pets under 3 years of age. Socialization at a young age can act as a vaccine of sorts to help prevent these tragic conditions in adulthood. When is the best time to socialize your dog? One thing that makes dogs uniquely able to bond so closely with humans is that neurodevelopment of their frontal lobes is delayed until weeks after birth. When puppies are born, only certain components of the nervous system are fully developed in order to allow basic movements and sensations. There is a transition period from 13 to 20 days of age in which puppies open their eyes, become more coordinated, and start to respond to sound. Puppies adapt easily to human observers at 3 weeks of age, but may need time to warm up to people if not exposed to them until 7 weeks of age. Puppies that are isolated until 12 weeks of age are more fearful and less accepting of strangers. Based on these observations, a critical sensitive period has been described as beginning at 3 weeks of age and ending around 12 weeks of age. This means that socialization should ideally begin with the breeder or rescue and continue immediately upon adoption after 8 weeks. Socialization activities should not stop at the end of the sensitive period, as most dogs benefit from continued positive exposure during their first year and throughout life. How do you socialize your dog? Many people are aware of the importance of socialization, but it is just as important to understand how to do it properly. Intentional socialization should be structured in a way that sets a puppy up for a positive experience that will help them learn not to be fearful. It is extremely important that these interactions are positive, relaxed, and fun. Socialization is best done in short periods, with only a few new things and with plenty of high-value rewards such as treats, toys, and praise. Owners are encouraged to expose their puppies to as many new people, places, and other animals and experiences as is practical. Dog parks should be avoided for younger puppies, as they should only be introduced to dogs that are known to be friendly, up to date on vaccines, and free of disease. The best way to start the socialization process is to find a reliable trainer that offers puppy kindergarten classes where your puppy will be able to play with others and you can learn how to incorporate these principles into all of your puppy outings. Ask your veterinarian for recommendations on good trainers in your area that use positive, science-based methods to help your puppy achieve greatness. Should socialization begin before or after vaccination? Historically, veterinarians have recommended waiting until a puppy has finished all of his or her puppy vaccines before interacting with other dogs outside of the home. Now that we understand the critical windows of socialization, it is clear that waiting until 4 months of age is simply too late. The American Veterinary Medical Association, or AVMA, and the American Veterinary Society of Animal Behavior, AVSAB, agree that socialization outside of the home should begin after the first vaccination at around 8 weeks of age. Of course, it is still vital that all puppies receive appropriate vaccinations in order to prevent infectious disease. A puppy should get the first set of vaccines and one deworming at least 7 days prior to his or her first puppy class and should be kept up to date throughout the class. As long as your puppy and those he or she interacts with are on schedule for their vaccinations, there is much lower risk of developing one of these illnesses. This minimal risk is far outweighed by the benefit of proper socialization for the development of a happy, friendly, and interactive companion. Next, house soiling in cats. Have you had that problem? Causes, prevention, and management. Why is it important? Inappropriate urination in cats, peeing out of their litter box, is one of the main reasons why cats are relinquished to shelters. In addition, it can be incredibly frustrating for pet owners. What causes it? There are many potential causes of house soiling in cats. Some possible causes can include medical problems, feline idiopathic cystitis, and environmental conditions. Therefore, seeking veterinary attention to rule out possible medical conditions is an important step. What is feline idiopathic cystitis, or FIC? FIC is an inflammatory condition of the lower urinary tract that is frequently seen in male cats. Cats with FIC will often show the following clinical signs: straining to urinate, urinating in unusual places, bloody urine, and urinary blockage. The exact cause of this condition is not known, but a portion of patients appear to have a stress response disorder that results in enhanced sensitization of the stress response syndrome. It is a chronic condition that will require lifelong environmental changes. possible medical conditions. A complete physical examination, blood work, and urinalysis are recommended. Often medical conditions in cats can initially present as house soiling behaviors. It is important to rule out conditions such as urinary tract infection, bladder stones, kidney disease, diabetes, hyperthyroidism, and arthritis. If a medical condition is present, it is important to diagnose it and appropriately treat it. Environmental factors. After potential medical conditions have been ruled out, there are various environmental changes that can help you encourage your cat to use the litter box. Helpful tips. The number of litter boxes. It is recommended that there be at least one more litter box than the number of cats. For example, in a two-cat household, there should be at least three litter boxes. Managing the litter box. The litter box should ideally be cleaned once per day and washed out every 1 to 4 weeks. No cat wants to use a dirty litter box. When cleaning, try not to use strong scents that could deter your cat. The type of litter. Some cats have different preferences for different types of litter. Use the type of litter that your cat tends to prefer. Unscented, clumping litter is often a preference. Easy access. Make sure it is easy for your cat to access the litter box and that it isn't near anything noisy, scary, that could spook your cat away from using the litter box. The size of the litter box. Litter boxes should be approximately 1 to 5 times the length of the cat. Husbandry changes. Helping to reduce stress and fully enriching your cat's life is an important part of management of inappropriate elimination and feline idiopathic cystitis. Certain husbandry changes could include: place feel-away diffusers in all rooms to reduce stress. Ensure your cats have frequent opportunities for playtime with you. High perches, such as cat trees, can help reduce stress. Ensure your cat has an area they can retreat to if they feel threatened. Try not to place food and water close to the litter box. Yuck. Ensure litter boxes are kept in separate locations and different levels of your house, if applicable. In summary, inappropriate urination in cats should not be ignored. Please mention to your veterinarian if your cat is inappropriately urinating, as it could be a sign of a more serious medical condition. Your veterinarian can work with you to develop strategies to help treat this problem. Next, in the autumn 2017 edition of Pet Tales, Ask a Vet. Melissa, a reader, says, Heidi is my 6-year-old Persian, and she recently has been sliding her bottom on the floor. Why does she do this, and how can I make her stop? Linda A. Banks, DVM, responds, Melissa, Heidi is showing a behavior commonly referred to as scooting, and there are a few common and easily treatable causes for this. One of the more common causes in long-haired cats is the collection of fecal matter in the fur around the anus. In cats that may be a bit overweight, it can become difficult for them to keep themselves clean after having a bowel movement, and their stool gets stuck, and they are unable to clean it without assistance, so will scoot to try to get themselves clean. Keeping the fur clipped short around the area will help prevent this from happening. You can also invest in a box of baby wipes and wipe the area clean after she uses the litter box as needed. Another cause of scooting, again something seen more commonly in overweight female cats, is the inability to keep the skin around the vulva clean. This collection of dirt, urine, stool, and debris can lead to a perivulvular dermatitis, which causes the skin to become red, irritated, and often infected, and can be quite itchy and sometimes painful if left untreated. You should definitely see your veterinarian if you see these signs in Heidi. And if she is a bit overweight, ask your doctor for some tips on how to help her lose the excess pounds, as this could prevent her from having chronic problems in the future. The third most common cause of scooting in cats is the irritation felt when the anal glands become too full. Anal glands are normal scent glands used for marking purposes and are located at about 4 o'clock and 8 o'clock around the inside opening of the anus. They are usually emptied regularly when your cat has a bowel movement. Sometimes the material is too thick to come out, or the pet's stools are too soft, or they are constipated and not pooping often enough, and the glands get too full. When this happens, they get itchy, or they can even develop an infection inside the gland, causing irritation, which leads to scooting. Again, the treatment for this is best left in the hands of your veterinarian, who can empty or express the glands or treat any infection that may be present. This would also be an excellent time for them to examine a stool sample to make sure Heidi doesn't have intestinal parasites, another potential cause for scooting. Good luck with your kitty, and thanks for the great question. And now, for the portion of the program I like to call, Don't Eat That. We hear a lot of warnings about what plants are toxic for pets, but this time Melissa Erickson has a list of plants that are perfectly safe for pets. And this was also published in the fall 2017 edition of Pet Tales. And Melissa Erickson writes, a surprising amount of ornamental plants are both beautiful and dangerous to pets. Puppies and kittens, as well as grown pets, will chew on a variety of indoor plants, and pet parents need to make sure they won't cause the cats or dogs harm. Pet owners should always be mindful of what they bring into the household, said Christine R. Rutter, clinical assistant professor at the College of Veterinary Medicine and Biomedical Sciences at Texas A&M University. Toxic plants can cause anything from gastrointestinal tract or oral irritation, an upset stomach, to major organ failure, leading to death. Plant ingestions don't typically cause allergic reactions. Vomiting, oral pain, diarrhea, anorexia, and lethargy are common after a plant toxin ingestion, Rutter said. Eating certain houseplants can also cause pets to act drunk or agitated, Rutter said. Some plants, lilies specifically, are toxic enough to cats that even their pollen can cause acute kidney failure, which may not cause clinical signs in your pet for 2 to 3 days. Even benign plants like wheatgrass, marketed as pet grass, can make some pets vomit, she said. A pet-friendly house doesn't have to be plant-free. There are plenty of non-toxic houseplants available at garden centers and big box stores, said veterinarian Justine A. Lee, an emergency critical care specialist and chief executive officer at VetGirl. Here are some of her pet-friendly favorites. The spider plant. There's a lot to love about the classic spider plant. It's easy to grow and care for and does well in low light conditions. Cats are going to chew on it. They love to play with the fronds. As long as they don't eat too much, they won't vomit. Even if they do, it's non-toxic, Lee said. Next is succulents. Succulents will not harm pets if eaten, including hens and chickens, echeveria, and rosettes. One friendly choice is donkey's or burro's tail, a graceful indoor plant with small, thick blue-green leaves that appear to be woven. It will provide interesting texture in a succulent container or fall gracefully from a hanging basket. Donkey's tail will thrive indoors with sunshine, gritty soil, and good drainage. Ferns. The Boston fern is one non-toxic variety, but other ferns can be dangerous. So be sure to check before adding one to your home. A great houseplant, as long as you remember to keep it watered, The Boston fern can grow quite large with frilly leaves and long hanging fronds. And the prayer plant, an easy house plant to care for. The prayer plant, also known as Calathea, peacock plant, or rattlesnake plant, curls up its leaves at night like a pair of praying hands. This hardy indoor plant has fun, variegated foliage and is often found in hanging baskets or growing horizontally across furniture. For more information on whether a plant is toxic to your pet, consult the ASPCA's Poison Plant Database at aspca.org. There is a fee associated with the consultation, but with the website, that is free. If a pet ingests a plant of questionable toxicity, owners should get toxin information from their veterinarian and/or ASPCA Animal Poison Control immediately, Rutter said. With some of the more severe toxins, clinical signs may not be apparent for 2 to 3 days, which may be too late to save the pet. And we have a book review. The book is called Inside of a Dog, What Dogs See, Smell, and Know by Alexandra Horowitz. The answers will surprise and delight you as Horowitz, a cognitive scientist, explains how dogs perceive their daily world, each other, and quirky humans. Introducing readers to dogs' perceptual and cognitive ability, she then draws a picture of what it might be like to be a dog. This book has practical applications for dog lovers interested in understanding why their dogs do what they do. With a light touch and the weight of science behind her, Alexandra Horowitz examines the animal we think we know best, but may actually understand the least. This book is as close as you can get to knowing about dogs without being a dog yourself. And you can get the book at Amazon.com. And we have a hot product from Pet Tales also, Patch Potty Training Grass. Why real grass? There are many reasons to embrace the hydroponically grown dirt-free grass in Fresh Patch. Real grass training pads are all natural and completely safe to use inside your home. Dogs instinctively want to go on real grass, so training is easy. The living grass absorbs liquids and controls odors, turning puppy potty training into an easy and stress-free experience. No cleaning or maintenance needed because the entire unit is fully disposable. And you can find that at freshpatch.com. And that'll do it for this week. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. I hope you enjoyed the program. Please join me next time. And don't forget, please spay and neuter your pets. It's healthy for them and the environment. Pets Plus Us is a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. If you'd like more information about this program or to hear this program again, visit our website at wxxi.org/reachout. I'd also like to invite you to share your pet story with us by writing to us at reachout@wxxi.org.